Hey, I'm Micah.
And I'm Jen.
From 1994 to 1996, Jen lived in the middle of nowhere, Montana.
But not by choice.
She was sent to a therapeutic boarding school.
I had some issues.
While there, she performed hard labor.
There was also a lot of forced exercise.
Went through daily, hours-long group therapy.
That shit didn't work.
And when she left, she was left with some holes in her life.
Holes?
One of the holes was her pop culture hole.
Yeah, I missed a lot of shit.
And that's a hole we can fill. So get ready to take over the world. It's time for...
I never saw that.
Gee, Jen, what do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night, Micah. Try to take over the world.
The Pinky and the Brain. Yes, Pinky and the Brain. One is a genius, the other's insane.
So which one of us is the genius and which one of us is insane, do you think?
It's interesting that you say that. Because I had that note in here. Which one is the genius?
Well, it's the brain, obviously.
Is it?
Yeah, Pinky's a dipshit.
Well, I think it's clear that Brain is insane. Because he wants to take over the world. He's a megalomaniac.
Man, yeah, but is that the same? I mean, what's the definition of insanity?
Well, that's a good question, Jen. But I think that Pinky is actually the genius. In case you didn't pick up on this, we're talking about Pinky and the Brain.
Yes. Pinky's a whack job, and he's not smart.
He's not smart, but not smart doesn't mean insane.
He does. No, you're right. But this was 1995, and I think that they just made him act like goofy and then called him insane.
I think that's what you're supposed to think. But I think if you really watch it and follow along, Brain has all these big schemes, insane schemes to take over the world.
No, I don't disagree.
And Pinky is always sabotaging them. And you're supposed to think he's stupid and he's doing it by accident. But I think that he's looking out for the world and he's a genius and he's just playing Brain and sabotaging him. I think he's undercover.
I think that is entirely possible. I'm sure you're not the only person out there with that theory.
Probably not.
Yeah, that's fine. It's fine that you think that. I mean, you're entitled to your stuff. Anyway, so we watched, how many episodes did we watch? Four?
Yeah, well, we watched three episodes of Pinky and the Brain proper. Or whatever. And then we watched the first appearance of them on Animaniacs.
Which is where they first appeared.
Yeah, in 1993, I believe. So Animaniacs started in 93, I think.
Yeah. I'm not sure when.
Pinky and the Brain was spun off in 1995. There were four seasons, although the last season in 1998 only had seven episodes. But I haven't looked at the breakdown because some of the episodes are long, like whatever, 22 minutes or whatever. Full half-hour show was back then. And some of the episodes that they count as episodes are shorter, where they do like two stories per episode. You know what I mean?
Yes. And we watched a couple short. Like, we watched half of an episode.
And I have to say, I think the shorter ones worked better for me.
Yeah. Well, so we watched the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
The pilot.
Das Mouse.
As it were. We watched that whole thing. That was just one long episode. And then we watched season two, Pink Also.
Mm-hmm.
And then season three, Pinky and the Brainmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Animaniacs one, which was called, did it have a name? I don't know if it had
Win
a name.
Big.
But it's the one where they go on this fake Jeopardy show.
Yes.
So this came out while I was gone. And it's funny because I obviously didn't watch it when it was on, but I knew I was like familiar with the theme song and the general idea of the show.
So it came out in, this came out in 95, but Pinky and the Brain had been a regular segment of Animaniacs for a few years, starting in 93. So you probably had an awareness of it, and the theme song was the same and everything. I was surprised by how that stuff hadn't changed.
The funny thing is, though, it's the same with Animaniacs. Animaniacs started about a year before I left.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that theme song. It was part of the, like, after school block of shows. And we will talk about more of those at some point, I actually would love to do an episode on Animaniacs. And there's another show called Freakazoid.
Hmm.
Which I think was only on for a season or two.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that.
Apparently made by the same people, but I would like to... Maybe we'll do an episode on those two shows. But I remember the Animaniacs theme song very well. I mean, I remember... I don't remember it.
Why don't you sing it all for us? Please.
We're Animaniacs. Doo-doo-doo-doo. Love on our backs. Hey, and we went to the... We're Animaniacs. Totally insane-y. We're Animaniacs.
Wow.
They were really into the word insane.
Yeah, and the whole, like... Animaniacs thing. They're really leaning on that ableist language that wouldn't fly as well right now.
Anyway, but I remember that very well, but I don't remember ever watching the show. And if we watched it, maybe it would be familiar.
Yeah. But see, I recognized the song as soon as you started thinking of it, but I couldn't come up with it on my own. But the Pinky and the Brain theme song I knew right away. And I remember watching this a little bit when I was in college because I remember, again, professors talking about, like, this is so good.
It's, Pinky and the Brain?
Yeah, because it references so many things.
Yes.
I was a communication major, so it made sense that my professors were talking about this, just in case anyone's wondering what kind of crappy college I went to. I feel like we were a little older than the target demographic for these cartoons, though. So that's maybe why we're not as familiar with them.
In 95, we turned 17, and I was gone anyway. But I said this in our very first, not the intro episode, but when we talked about Cool Runnings, that I loved kids' stuff still before I left, in spite of like all the shit that was going on in my life. So I watched those Winnie the Pooh VHS tapes like every day after school. This show was very, you know, Pinky and the Brain and Animaniacs as well were more, a little more subversive, a little more, like a little darker than
it has
those
that,
other cartoons.
That like sly wink that Looney Tunes has and a lot of the WB Warner stuff has.
Right.
And I liked all the parody. There's a lot of stuff in it for older kids and for adults without it being... Like, now I feel like sometimes there are cartoons that they try to slip in jokes for the adults or references for the adults, and they're just, like, sexual or they're weird. There was a time when that was the way some animation did it, and I don't feel like Warner Brothers did that very much. I mean, there's the overtly sexual stuff, but I don't think that was in there for the adults. I think that's just,
really
like,
subtle,
we're putting that in there. I liked all the references to old classic things. Like old actors and old Hollywood. And then they also had, just like Looney Tunes, they also had a lot of classical music.
Well,
as part of the soundtrack.
Yeah. Was there anything besides the Nutcracker?
There were a couple others. I wrote notes. I didn't know what the music was, but.
They also referenced classic artists, but which we'll get to. But I was thinking about the tone of the show and how and where it falls. Like what you were just saying is there was a period of animation where. They were trying to make jokes for adults and whatever. I don't know. I just, this, it felt really of its time. And I can't really articulate why that is. I think that it struck a balance where it doesn't feel like they're throwing in jokes for adults. You know what I mean? I mean, well, there are some parts where you're like, kids would never get this.
Pinky, it's a miracle.
Lenny and Squiggy finally got their own show?
No, Pinky.
I did love the concept. I think the concept is really, really brilliant. It's really simple, but it's one of those things that works for a short cartoon. And basically, the concept, for people that don't know, is there are two mice that live in Acme Labs. They're genetically modified mice, and one of them is a genius. Jen thinks it's Brain. And one of them is insane, or just really stupid, Pinky. And every night they try to take over the world. So there's a limit. And at the same time, they totally play on that because all of Brain's schemes are super complex and complicated and would take months or
and
years
don't
or
really make
longer.
Any sense.
They don't make any sense.
The plans, Pinky, for the superconductive magnetic infundibulator. Shall I explain how it works?
Sheriff! Challenge me!
I'm sure I will. By using the infundibulator to deplete hydrogen and promote gravitational collapse, we will produce a magnetic charge from the center of the Earth so strong that every person who has loose change in their pockets will be magnetically drawn to the ground and stuck there.
Egad, brain, brilliant! Oh, no way. What if they take off their pants?
Then we'll have to take over the world quickly.
At the end of the episode, every single time, Brain says,
"Where are you going, Brain?"
"Back to the cage to plan for tomorrow night."
"Why? What are we going to do tomorrow night?"
"The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world."
So they open and close each episode with the same thing. Mm-hmm. That said, I do, and I brought this up a little bit before, I feel like 22 minutes is a long time. It really dragged for me on the episodes that were full. Not like split
well,
into two shorter stories.
We only watched one of those.
And it didn't work as
well
for me.
It was also the very first episode.
That's true.
The very first episode was so, I really was not feeling it at all. And it was very slow and I was very bored. I was not paying attention a lot of the time. So sorry about that. But I do know that the plan, Brain's plan in that one was to... Well, it had something to do with hypnotic frog fluid and a pancake jamboree. And somehow he was going to try to hypnotize the entire world, I guess, at a pancake jamboree. Maybe you're right. God, that is not a good plan. You know, like maybe he is not. I don't like using the word insane because it doesn't really even mean anything. I mean, he's delusional.
Yes.
So maybe that's part of insanity. But yeah, so other than that, I remember nothing about the first episode. They were on a boat at some point, and
yeah, they didn't explain this plan very well either. So their plan involves stealing frog fluid that's hypnotic, but for some reason they also need this white crab meat, and this white crab only exists in one place, and that's in the sunken hull of the Titanic.
Of course it is.
I don't know what that has to do with pancakes, but the beginning of the episode, Brain makes some pancakes to try to feed them to Pinky and see if they can get people to eat them. And they taste horrible because they have frog fluid in them. So maybe they're going to get the crab meat to make it taste better. I don't know. Anyway, they steal a submarine that has the sub club on it, like the club that you put on your steering wheel so your car doesn't get stolen. So they can only make right turns in the sub. So it takes them a long time to get there. They do finally get to the Titanic. They're being chased by the CIA and military people. And there's a lot of jokes in there that I thought were kind of funny where the big admiral or whatever says,
"The old man is concerned."
"The president?"
"No, just some old man. The boys want that thing terminated."
"The boys? You mean the Pentagon?"
"No, my two boys, Josh and Aaron."
So they do that a lot. Anyway, I was confused because they raised the Titanic using Pinky on a hamster wheel running to compress gas into a balloon to raise the whole Titanic.
Mm-hmm. I don't see. I see no problem with that.
Okay. It only took like 30 seconds too.
Hmm.
So maybe Brain is a genius because that totally worked.
Yeah. Well, and also they are genetically modified lab mice.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know what kind of power and strength Pinky has. He might
be
the strongest mouse in the world.
That's true.
And they just don't. Somehow they don't know that.
Hmm.
You know. So, I hated I didn't hate it. I just was not into the first episode. And then after we watched that, I looked up like a list of best episodes and found a list that apparently a bunch of people had voted on. So it's not just like one nerd in his basement, but all of the best episodes were almost all of them were in season 3, a few in season 4 and a couple in season 2. Nothing from season 1. So I think that season 1 just kind of sucked.
Yeah.
And it's good that they got another season because the next one we watched, did you have other things to say about the first episode or can we not?
Just that Pinky sabotages it because he asks Brain over and over, like, I can't make this pancake recipe taste good. And he takes things literally that Brain says. And they use this a lot in this episode. And I think later on too, but there are a lot of idioms that Brain uses, like,
hit the floodlights.
Ow!
Turn on the floodlights.
Oh, right. Sorry, Brain.
Narf.
So, yeah.
He says narf.
That's Pinky's phrase or reaction to everything, basically.
Yeah, do they... Is there a reason for that, or is just...
It's just the noise he makes.
It's the noise he makes that they started doing right away.
Narf! What is narf? Do you mind telling me what that is?
Well, let's see. It's like...
Do it!
Or, point!
Pinky keeps bringing this up as they're trying to raise the Titanic.
About that recipe, Brain. Getting rid of that bad taste.
Not now, Pinky.
But Brain...
Cut it out.
Oh, aye aye.
Pinky took it literally, so he left the hypnotic fluid out. They did have a successful pancake jamboree. They fed 10,000 people, but it didn't have the hypnotic stuff in it. So Brain at the very end is like... So the show did have a lot of guest voice actors, I think, that did recurring characters. I know Mark Hamill was on a few times. Luke Skywalker.
Oh, right. Sorry. Oh, my God. We're cutting that I couldn't place who that was. No, I can't take the ire of Star Wars nerds. It's like the worst ire there is.
Also...
like the time that Micah got so mad at me because I thought the Millennium Falcon was the Death Star or something. Do you remember that?
No, it wasn't even...
No, it wasn't the Death Star.
You it thought was... the fucking Star Trek, like Starship Enterprise, was the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, well, it was like a model. I don't know where we were. There was some big model of it. And Micah was like, Jen, look. I was like, yeah. What is that, the Millennium Falcon? No, you must not have said, Jen, look. You wouldn't have been excited about the Star Trek ship, would you?
No.
The way you told that story was wrong.
What do you mean?
I just, because I don't remember.
You told the story.
Because I don't remember.
I didn't.
How it happened.
Tell this. What?
Anyway, what were you saying?
I don't even know.
Fucking Star Wars nerds.
James Belushi was also... the voice in the first episode, he was a voice of someone, the sub hunter guy.
I like Star Wars, okay? I do.
Okay.
I like Star Wars. All I'm right. Just not like as nerdy about all the details.
But the voices of Pinky and the Brain, I think we should at least say their names. Rob Paulsen was Pinky and Maurice LaMarche was Brain. And he's kind of known for his Orson Welles impression. He does Orson Welles in a lot of other cartoons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And a quote I heard from him was that the Brain is 70% Wells, 20% Vincent Price, and I don't know, there's another 10% of something else in there. Some people think it's Peter Lorre, which fits really well with the whole Warner Brothers thing. Like, they like to reference old movies and old Hollywood stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jen, are you pondering what I'm pondering?
Yeah, I am, Micah. But how are we going to get all those dogs to pull our human sled?
No, you fool. I was thinking we should talk about Pinkasso.
Let's talk about Pinkasso.
Cool. Just in case you didn't know, that was another running gag that they did where Brain would see some opportunity to do something and he would ask, are you pondering what I'm pondering? And Pinky would say some off the wall thing that wasn't related at all. It was pretty funny. I liked that.
Mm-hmm. Pinkasso is so named because that becomes Pinky's artist name. Brain's new plot to take over the world has something to do with painting.
Tonight, Pinky, we are hosting a party, and the whole world will be attending.
On such short notice? Do you think Martha Stewart would approve, Brain?
We shall fire a rocket carrying billions of tiny self-adhesive mirrors at the moon. Upon detonation, the mirrors will cover the entire surface of the orb, thus creating a gigantic disco mirror ball. As humanity spends its every waking moment dancing the night away, we shall seize the planet.
Brilliant, Brain. Oh, wait. No. Where are we going to get a rocket at this hour?
From this Russian catalog, Pinky.
Mad Molotov's Warhead Warehouse. Cold War surplus at red-hot prices.
We'll need in excess of $23 million.
God, that's a lot of money. Where are we going to get it?
I intend to establish my reputation as an important and revered painter, then use the proceeds from the sale of my works to fund our venture.
So to raise the money, he's going to become this literally overnight sensation in the painting world, sell his paintings, and raise $23 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Seems doable.
Yeah, well, it is. So he goes out on the street and he's painting donuts. But then he sees that everybody else on the street is also painting donuts.
Yeah, the donut art market is saturated.
Donut painting's
over. It's already moved on. Yep.
But then what happens is that Pinky, of course, being the genius that Pinky is, drinks a can of paint or a cup of paint or of whatever it was of paint, blue paint.
Shoots it out his nose.
And then he vomits.
Does he vomit? Oh, okay.
I thought he vomited and it came out his nose. But then they do then refer to him as like a nasal artist. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was just out his nose after that. But basically these art critics come over and of course they love it. And this was one of the things I loved about this episode was they just totally dissed, you know, just the snobby art critic community and how fucking arbitrary it is and how insecure it can be. You know, I'm not saying there aren't great art critics and people who talk about art.
Nasalism.
Nasalism? Why, it's stunning in its primal angst.
And resplendent in its emotional density. Two noses up.
Look, there's the critic for Art Snob magazine.
Quick, we must go forth and proclaim Picasso's brilliance.
Before anyone else does.
So, Brain's name was Toulouse Le Brain.
Yes.
That was his plan. But then, as soon as Pinky became the star, Brain named him Picasso.
Again, Brain is not the genius. Pinky is. But Brain does pivot really well here, and Brain becomes an important art critic or something, and he says that Picasso's paintings are dirty somehow, so they soar in value, and then
he says they're indecent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved that part also.
And then Pinky, they stage Pinky's death so that his paintings will be more valuable.
Right.
This Brain is all says, happening in the span of one night, remember?
Brain says no one really appreciates an artist until they're dead.
Right.
True.
So then they start auctioning off the paintings, and right as they're about to get to $23 million, Brain gets a little greedy. And the last painting that they put up for auction, like the other ones were selling for the tens of thousands and stuff, and this one, the bidding starts at like $1.5 million, and it goes way up, and Brain is just like, yes, yes, we'll make more money. And he draws it way out, and all the people that are bidding are crying and saying how they have to have it because it was Picasso's last, and they're so sad. And Pinky's hiding under the podium, but he gets all caught up in the emotion too and jumps up on the podium and says he misses Picasso. And then everyone realizes, oh, he's not dead, and it's all a sham, and they're... plan goes to hell, and they don't get to turn the moon into a disco ball.
Yeah. I bet you didn't see that coming.
I will create the world's most beloved Celtic dance troupe.
So the third episode we watched was
Pinky and the Brain Maker.
This was number one on the list that I was looking at of best episodes ever. It seemed like you did not think it deserved that title, Micah.
I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was funny, but it was a bit of a bottle episode. Like, it only had Pinky and the Brain in it. There's usually some other characters that they go out and encounter as they're trying to take over the world, but this one was just in the lab. They didn't even leave the lab, and it was just the two of them. And it seemed shorter, and it was a lot more surreal.
I liked this one because of the phrase that came to my mind was just delightful absurdity, and that's that is how I would describe this show. It really is delightfully absurd. I mean, I think that they captured a certain surrealism, and still it's goofy and silly. But there's also, if you think about it more deeply too, there's like implications to this shit. You know what I mean? It's sort of like Groundhog Day. You know, if you just watch that movie once and you're like, haha, that's funny, that's one thing. But if you actually watch it over and over and then you start thinking about the fucking implications of that,
How long he was actually repeating the same day.
And the reason I'm saying that is because in this episode, they make copies of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so just, you know, that right there is, you know, a fucking episode of Orphan Black. That's like a dark sci-fi concept, you mm-hmm. know, that people love to play with. And I loved that they did it in this. I don't know. It was really funny and kind of mesmerizing.
Yeah, it was cool.
Because it was a lot of, there wasn't as much dialogue. It was a lot of dance. This was the one that had the Nutcracker music mm-hmm. in it. It was all about dance.
Yeah, because it opens with Pinky playing with like a globe beach ball. So he's like literally got the world that he's bouncing up and down. He's dancing to the Nutcracker and doing ballet and bouncing the beach ball. Up and down.
Did I just say something accidentally brilliant?
Because did you?
The whole world in his hands. You know what that song's about, right?
About ballet?
That song's about God, Micah.
I know.
And if you can duplicate yourself, that's sort of like your God, or like you're playing God. And so maybe that was in the beginning of the episode, that was a very like, you know, subtle. Only for the brilliant ones of us who would get it, that Pinky had the whole world in his hands.
Mm-hmm. I think everyone's clear on who's the Pinky and who's the brain in this relationship.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Wait.
Let's just talk about the episode, okay. Ted. Okay.
Well, I thought it was doing that.
So, Pinky's dancing, pops the balloon with his tail, and then tries to figure out what Brain is up to. And Brain explains his scheme.
You realize what this gemination machine will give us, Pinky?
An excuse to look up the word gemination?
No. It will give us enough clones to take over the world.
But then you just put in a picture of what you want to duplicate, and it comes out full, you know.
Alive.
Alive, yeah. And yeah.
So he has a picture of himself. It's black and white, so the clone comes out and it's black and white, and he makes one, and then he tells Pinky to make a bunch more because he's going to teach them how to dance, and somehow dancing will mesmerize the world and he'll take over the world.
I never understood what his plan was in this one.
So Brain is teaching them to do like a Celtic dance, and of course Pinky fucks it up and one of the corners of the picture gets bent, so he's using the same picture of Brain and just feeding it back into this dollar scanner thing. One of the corners gets bent. He licks it and tries to straighten it out like you do with a dollar bill when you're trying to get it to go in there.
I have never licked it. That was a new thing for me. I'd never seen that method.
But it gets really wet and it gets all messed up and Brain notices it. So
yeah, Brain points to where there are a bunch of, he's like, dude, you idiot. There's a whole bunch more photos.
So he grabs one that has Pinky in it mostly and Brain Pinky, gets cropped out. And so he starts making Pinky clones, and the Pinky clones dance ballet style,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a dance off.
Yeah, and they end up doing, it's not really a dance, well, it's a dance off between Pinky and the Brain, but the clones are sort of, like, they start doing both, and then it kind of becomes this combination of ballet and Scottish, what did you say it was called? Scottish?
Celtic dancing. Oh, is what he called it.
Okay. I thought there was a name. I thought there was like a name for the dance or that style of dance, but perhaps it's Celtic.
He called it Celtic dance. And so the clones start doing a dance off and then they kind of combine and Pinky's dancing with them, but then they kind of kick him out. And
it's like they can't resist what the other ones are doing.
Yeah.
Right? That is what happens, right? That they like what the other ones are doing, and so they want to be part of it. They can't help themselves because the music is so powerful.
It's
and
a super mesmerizing dance. I mean, Brain was totally right.
Oh, that's what was happening? Actually being hypnotized?
No, but just the whole act of dancing. Anyway, they dance, and it became almost like some of those old Looney Tune segments where things were dancing and moving around. It was like a musical.
Feels like an old movie
to
me, like some old black and white movies. There's one that's in my head that I can't remember. I don't remember what it actually is. I think it's actually a Marx Brothers movie.
These are good. These are both really good, solid references that we're not referencing. I like it a lot. I hope you guys are enjoying this. This reminds me of that one
Marx
thing.
Brothers movie.
There's something that it reminds
there's
me
a
of.
There's a Marx Brothers movie where there's a whole, they do this whole extended scene of these dancers. And that's all it is just these dancers. And then, of course, the Marx Brothers start doing their shit, you know. But it's very, my point is, it's very mesmerizing.
Yeah.
There weren't competing dancers, so I guess that isn't so much relevant to this, but...
So eventually they dance enough that the brain dancers do kind of take over, and they put all the pinky dancers in cages. They get them to, like, dance into cages, and then they lock them up. And then the brain dancers come over and corner Brain, and they're about to, like, pounce on him and attack. And then my least favorite part of this episode came up. Brain wakes up. It was all a dream.
It's funny. I had forgotten. I did not take notes on this episode because my hand was really hurting. Mm. And so I was icing my hand and I couldn't take notes. And so I had forgotten how it ended. The part that just, the only thing that really sticks with me about it is just the dancing. And I don't know. It seems like in my mind it's different than how it actually was. What I do know for sure is that the dancing was very cool to watch, in my opinion. I really, really enjoyed that scene. I thought it was, again, it was delightfully absurd. The whole episode was, and it was mesmerizing. And well, like you said, it was this musical number that was cool. Like,
so the animation was cool. It's very geometric. And
yeah, and I don't feel like cartoons do that often. You're right that Warner Brothers did that, but it was always with action that was happening along with the music, which was brilliant, and I love that. But this was just music and dancing. Anyway, I really liked that one. I don't know why it's the best episode ever, but whatever.
So the final episode we watched was a segment. It was the first appearance on Animaniacs of Pinky and the Brain, and it's called Win Big.
Which a couple people in our Facebook group said they really loved that one. I also enjoyed it. Again, I did not take notes on it. So who knows what happened in it. I'm just going to get this out there first. Because actually, nothing problematic has come up in this show. Has it?
I mean, the insane stuff that we talked about a little bit at the beginning. But
yes, that's true. But anyway, the show, who is it that ends up on? Oh, right. Brain ends up on a show that is supposed to be Jeopardy, but it's called Jip Parody.
Yeah.
So Jip as in?
Gypsy?
Gypsy. Well, it's the term that people, I guess, probably still use.
Yeah.
Like, what a Jip, which means, you know, when you're
swindled or...
Yeah, which is a racial slur. Let me just sit y'all down.
Or it's an ethnic slur, yeah. But it's also,
no, wait.
I didn't get it because it doesn't have anything to do with the show. So it didn't make any sense to me other than it kind of sounds like Jeopardy.
That's all it was. It was just a way to put a syllable there that went with parody that sort of sounded like Jeopardy. But anyway, what I was trying to say is that the word Jip, not only the word Jip, the word Gypsy is an ethnic slur, guys. So...
maybe take that one out of your vocabulary.
I know that a lot of people love to use the word gypsy and are very well-intentioned about it. People like to say that they're gypsies if they're kind of free-spirited or
bohemian.
Wanderers. Yes, exactly. Gypsy is not... that's not... just don't use gypsy, maybe.
Cool.
Unless you are Roma, which is the correct term for that ethnic group of people... then you can call yourself whatever the hell you want. But it's not ours to use unless you are Roma.
So maybe the writer of this episode was Roma and just thought it would be funny to put that
in
there.
I don't think so. Because I think Jip is particularly offensive.
I don't know why anyone would think that was funny to put in, though, because it doesn't even make sense. Like, the joke doesn't make sense. There's no joke. Anyway, let's move on. Can we talk about the scheme? Because I thought the scheme for this one was actually great.
Okay.
Brain wants to make a superconductor magnetic infundibulator.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They have everything they need there in the lab, except for the infundibulator. And to get that, they...
They need the Farmer's Almanac?
There's an ad in the Farmer's Almanac.
Okay, that's what it was.
It's like, make your own instructions for an infundibulator, but it costs $99,000 for the parts.
Make your own instructions?
It's you like mean instructions for make your own infundibulator. Yes.
So I was going to be like, why would that cost that much money if you're just making up your own instructions?
And then you end and up also, with an infundibulator. And also,
like, why do you even need an ad for that either? I don't know. If you're, you know, you could just.
It's not really an ad, I guess. Get some note cards. In the Farmer's Almanac. Anyway, in order to make $99,000, they decide to go on this game show that Pinky watches. Because Pinky really likes late night TV. So at the very beginning of the episode, he's watching The Honeymooners. And he starts talking about it. He keeps talking about it over and over and over. But Brain ignores him. He hates that show. He doesn't want to talk about it. So,
well, because he's dismissing it as
stupid
knowledge that you don't.
Pop culture that you don't need. Right.
It's not real knowledge. He kept talking about the actor, though, who played one of the characters. What was the, you don't remember?
We'll get to that.
Well, okay. If we say it now, it'll be better when we get to it later, though.
So they decide to go on this show to make the money because they realize that you can win $99,000 on Jeopardy if you get all the answers right.
Right, but you have to get every single answer right.
So then Brain asks Pinky to ask him some questions to get him ready.
Okay. What TV character says, bang, zoom?
I told you to stop saying that. I don't care who says that.
Ralph Cramden, ta-da!
Brain doesn't learn that because he doesn't want to know that stupid pop culture nonsense that isn't important. He wants real hard questions about physics and history and stuff.
Yeah, so again, he is a tiny mouse in a giant suit. There's actually a really funny part where he's like in the cab on the way there. And I loved this part because the cab driver turns around and is like,
whoa, hey, if you don't mind me asking, bub, what happened to your head?
Nothing. I'm a mouse in a large mechanical suit.
Okay, all right, my fault for asking, right?
Oh, I love that part. That was really funny.
So, of course, Brain goes on the show. I'm just going to call it Jeopardy. And the host is Alex Quebec.
I loved Alex Quebec. I thought they did a really good job with him.
And he keeps calling Brain something, which I have to say.
Mad connections. We've come full circle.
So
he keeps calling him Brian because that's a name and Brain isn't.
This came out before My So-Called Life.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was a My So-Called Life reference at first. I didn't really, but.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
I think Jordan Catalano is just a big Animaniacs fan. You know, he acts like he's all super cool and just into like the Ramones and Buffalo Tom and smoking and.
Yeah.
His hair.
Okay, well, first of all, we need to explain what the fuck you're talking about. We on this podcast, if you're new to us, welcome. Hi. How are you?
Hi there.
We did all of My So-Called Life, and Jordan Catalano is a character from that show. Hot, dumb dude. He calls this other character, whose name is Brian, he keeps calling him Brain. And he actually thinks that's his name, and it's supposed to be funny. And so there you go. So that is what happened in this show. We were both like, oh, connection.
Yes.
What do you think it means?
I think it means that Brian and Brain are spelled very similarly.
Very, a lot alike. They're really a lot alike. I think that's what it means. Yeah.
I guess what we're saying is.
I guess what we're saying is that sometimes people named Brian get called Brain, and sometimes people named Brain get called Brian. And the reason for that is that it's just two vowels that you switch.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's the bottom line here.
Uh-huh. That's it. That's all I got.
Okay. So anyway, Brain does answer every single question correctly. Mm-hmm. He runs the board.
Except for Final Jeopardy.
Yes. And guess what the question was?
What TV character is known for saying zoom, bang, right in the kisser?
Right. And Brain. And this is a common theme, too, where Brain blows Pinky off and then learns to appreciate him for whatever reason. So when he gets that question, he's just like, devastated, and he yells out, Pinky! And they're like, no, that's not the right answer.
Yeah. It is very formulaic.
So he loses all the money.
There are a lot of repeat gags. We saw just even in the four episodes that we watched, there are a lot of repeat gags. It's very, very formulaic. But I like that it's so constrained, and they do it really well.
Yeah, every episode, it's the same.
You know what's going to happen every single time. Like, you know he's not actually going to take over the world.
It's like Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. Yeah. It's like, which is much simpler and always funny to me. But I'm kind of the Pinky in this situation, so that could explain that. But
it's a simple formula, but they put in so many references to old pop culture, like I mentioned already, probably five times. And there are so many other little jokes going on all the time that it works on a lot of different levels. And
yeah, and they make it kind of sci-fi like, not really, but
well, it is. It's little anthropomorphized
mice
that can talk to humans.
Well, right. They're the premise, you're right, is that they're lab rats or lab mice, but I meant more like the Brain's plots.
Mm-hmm.
His plans always involve some sort of pseudo kind of scientific.
Yeah, they're like, he's like a Bond
that's
villain,
not
kind of.
Ever really explained, you know? Like,
I do feel like he, and I read some of this too, but I got the sense that it's never clear. It's never stated, I don't think, why he wants to take over the world. I think maybe it comes out in some other episodes because I read about things that it's not like this malevolent thing. He just thinks he can do a better job than anybody else because he's smarter.
Ah, that's funny.
So he doesn't want to take over the world and enslave them or...
Yeah, he never says anything like that. That is funny. That's true.
And he doesn't want to hurt people. He just wants to enthrall them with his dancing.
He says it in a very menacing way.
Yeah. Like, that's the Vincent Price part, that 20% Vincent Price. It's a little menacing.
Right. Like, so you're not really sure. But that's a good point. There is really no reason.
No, the goal is just take over the world. It never gets beyond that.
Because that's what you do.
Yeah.
That's what you do when you're a super villain and you're, like, a super smart mouse.
Oh, we never talked about what the defibrillator does, the electromagnetic. I loved this part because the plan was with the super magnetic whatever into infibrillator. Man, I said it correctly so many times that now that I'm not looking at it, I can't.
You didn't say it correctly that time.
No. They're going to turn the Earth into a giant magnet that will pull everyone down to the ground because of the pocket change they have.
Oh my God. Yes, 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 yes.
It's so great. It'll just pull him out of the ground and trap him there. That's his plan to take over the world.
And then what?
Nope.
They're
stuck.
Staying there forever.
Yeah. And Pinky actually says, what if they take their pants off?
Or what if they don't have pocket change? Doesn't he say that at one point?
I don't know. Maybe. I loved it.
Once again, delightful absurdity.
Yeah.
Yeah. He comes up with real bad plans. I think your theory, I'm going to look it up after this episode.
Oh, I'm sure.
I guarantee.
I'm sure I'm not the first person to think about that.
Lots of people.
Because they do not make it clear. They say one is a genius, the other is insane.
Yeah.
So I think it was supposed to be open for interpretation a little bit.
Yeah. I guess. It's just Pinky's, you know.
What?
He's just, you know?
Is he, though? I think it's all an act.
Yes. No. I don't think it's an act. I think that he does things that are accidentally brilliant once in a while.
Narf.
He didn't say it like that. That was more like Joey on Blossom.
Oh, God.
All right. So that's our take on Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah.
Beyond the first episode, I did enjoy it. The first episode, I was like, oh, no, we can't do an episode on this because I literally have nothing to say about it. But I really liked it. And I'm actually really looking forward to doing some more similar shows and other animated shows. Perhaps we will have our kids join us again for some of that.
So since this one was so lighthearted, we did have a request a while ago for some more positive or happy memories from Montana.
Yeah. So my mother, my mom, Chris. Hi, Chris. What's up, girl? She is one of our patrons. And her choice for an episode topic was happy Montana memories. I will get into more of that when we talk with some more people who were in Montana with me, but I wanted to address it because she requested that a long time ago. So just quickly, I know that the way that I talk about Montana is mostly pretty dark and pretty negative, and that's because that's how I feel about a lot of it now. I think it was, well, anyway, I'm not going to say a bunch of bad stuff to say a bunch of good stuff. But it wasn't all negative at all.
And we've talked a little bit about this before. Like, you took away some things that you were, another request or a question that we received was, are there any good things that came out of it? And you talked about all the athletic stuff you were doing.
Yeah. Well, and when we talked...
All the physical stuff. And
yeah. And when we talked with Sarah, you know, I mean, she and I talked and laughed and whatever about memories. And, like, there are... I mean, I connected with people there, first of all. There were some amazing people who, you know, I mostly lost touch with. But a few of them I'm back in touch with now, like Sarah, like Laurel, like Claire, who we'll talk to at some point, and a few others. But so Sarah and I talked about how we bonded over movie quotes, specifically The Three Amigos and A Fish Called Wanda. And I had this other friend who I bonded with over singing. And I remember, this is weird because I don't have that many clear, specific memories, you know, of just moments. But I remember we were working outside doing some kind of project, and she and I were working together, and we started singing. One of us started singing a Beatles song. It was We Can Work It Out, which is one of my favorite Beatles songs. And we just started, I don't remember who was singing the melody or whatever, but the other one of us started harmonizing. And it was like that moment on, that was our thing. Like, we sang together and separately, but we sang a lot together. And that was like our bond, you know. I have several happy memories of being outside doing various physical things. I mean, when I think about it, it's like we basically lived outside. We lived in little cabins. I mean, you know, we were indoors quite a bit as well, I guess, but we were outside so much. I mean, we had no screens. Well, that's not true. We had computers that we had to write stuff on. Oh, I'll talk about that some other time too. Anyway, my point is just having that much time outside and being in such a gorgeous place was like, that did not go unappreciated by me. And so having that much time in the mountains and doing things that I never thought I could do, it was very empowering. And, you know, there were a couple, I remember a bike ride where we were just riding down this hill and we were just, it was really fast and we're out, you know, in the mountains. And I just remember yelling. And, you know, that feeling of like just being free, ironically. But I experienced that, I think, several times. And I had another one of my closest friends there who I have completely lost touch with. And I've tried to find her and I can't find her. You know, she and I, like, we, when I was on work crew, she was also on work crew. And we were not allowed to talk to each other, but we could see each other from our spots. I was digging a giant ass stump out of the ground, and her task was to, oh my God, her task, Jesus Christ. Her task was to build a giant pile of sticks, like to gather all the sticks around this one area, or like branches and
like for a bonfire or
sort of like that, but just like make this giant pile. And then she had to take it apart.
Oh my God.
And then build it again. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so she was doing that. And I was digging a fucking stump out of the ground, or several stumps. And we just would look at each other and we would signal each other and just, we made each other laugh so much. And we just were You know, in spite of our very weird circumstances, I felt very close to a few of the people there, and she was one of them. Like, I just felt we were just such good friends. And
right. Well, you were going through traumatic stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
together.
Right. And going through that experience together, of course, it brings you close. And but you also only connect with, you know, you don't connect with everyone. I connected with a few people.
But even if you were just going through some of those components together, like working out really hard with people or doing these physical things with people, you were also doing intense therapy with these people.
Yeah. I mean, we knew everything about each other. When you think about it, I mean,
yeah,
we were required to basically tell every detail of our lives. So in that way, we were, you know, there's intimacy there, mm-hmm. even when you're forbidden from having any intimacy.
And even when it's forced
upon
you.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm trying to say is just there were times, I mean, there were people that I connected with. Sarah's one, and these two other people I'm referring to right now, who we had our ways of helping each other get through it and genuinely loving being together, genuinely loving spending time together. And, you know, we had some really incredible experiences. But anyway, back to singing. I sang a lot in Montana. That's mm-hmm. probably the number one thing I would say. That's where my happy memories are, because there aren't any really dark parts of that. Like, the singing was just singing. It was just always joyful. Mm-hmm. And I loved, we had a music teacher who I fucking loved. I mean, music teacher. She just played her guitar and we sang songs. That's all it was. You know, we sang The Rainbow Connection. We sang Annie's Song by John Denver, which actually is a beautiful fucking song. And other songs. But I really came to life in those moments. You know, she was very encouraging. She loved my voice. She encouraged me to just, you know, we'd all be singing and I would start kind of doing my own thing along with the song, and she was wonderful. And I sang to my roommates a lot at night, and then I started singing with this friend of mine, and also with, there were two staff members there that I sang with regularly, who were, one of them who played the guitar very well, and she had a beautiful voice, and another one of the staff members who played, he also played guitar incredibly well, and banjo, and just really amazing musicians. And so I got to have that connection with mm-hmm. them that not everyone had. That was like me and this other friend of mine, really, who had it, and we would all sing together. And so for our high school graduation, the day that I graduated from school and left there, which is also, parts of that are a happy memory as well, because my family came, mm-hmm. not my brother, but.
And you knew you were going home.
And like,
you were
done with this. Fuck. Yeah. And we went straight to Glacier Park after that. But like my cousin and aunt and uncle came, and my parents were there. And anyway, but the best part of that was that I sang The Wind by Cat Stevens at our high school graduation with this staff member and this friend of mine. And it was like, you know, we, the three of us, had spent so much time singing together, and it was such a happy part of Montana for me. And The Wind is like one of my very favorite songs to sing still. Thank you all so much for listening. We just appreciate it so much. Honestly, it's so cool to us that anyone wants to hear us talk about this shit, and your support means the world to us. Thank you. And thank you to Graham McRae for our artwork.
Thank you to Steve.
Steve.
Thank you to Fifi Folios for our internet stuff. Steve.
Oh, we're leaving that in? Good. Let's leave that in. And thank you to Minus Violet for our music.
Hey, what do you want to do next time, Jen?
The same thing we do every time, Micah. Try to make a fucking podcast. It doesn't suck.
Until next time.
See you in the 90s.
I listen to the wind of my soul. Where I'll end up, well, I think only God really knows. I've sat upon the setting sun, but never, 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 never. I never wanted water once, never, 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 never.